This episode of Search Engine is brought to you in part by Bombas. Summer's here, and I am living for all things outdoors right now. From my morning runs in the neighborhood to constant backyard barbecues, Bombas makes my comfiest summer staples so I can make the most out of every single plan. I've been logging miles in their sport-specific running socks. They're so soft and cushioned right where I need them. Plus, they're airy and sweat-wicking, so my feet feel amazing even at the end of a sweaty workout. For my upcoming summer flights, I'm packing their supportive compression socks. Usually those have a total hospital vibe, but Bombas makes them in vibrant summer colors that keep my legs feeling fresh. I'm also obsessed with their new slides made from ultra-lightweight, waterproof EVA foam. It literally feels like walking on marshmallows, whether I'm on a quick coffee run or lounging by the pool. Best of all, for every item you purchase, an essential clothing item is donated to someone facing housing insecurity. Head over to bombas.com/engine and use code ENGINE for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/engine, code ENGINE at checkout. This episode of Search Engine is brought to you in part by Mercury Bank. When you're starting a business, you don't need a complex suite of financial tools. You just need a reliable way to get paid and keep the lights on. But then, as you scale, your needs shift, and many founders get stuck because their banking setup can't keep up. Banking on Mercury is different because it's built to flex with you. You can start with exactly what you need today, like free same-day ACH and USD wires, and grow into more advanced capabilities, like automated spend management, invoicing, and granular team permissions as you hire your first 10 or even 50 employees. You don't have to deal with the pain of switching systems later because everything is integrated into one powerful platform. It's free to get started, requires zero in-person visits to get your accounts running, and ensures that your financial stack is never the thing holding your growth back. Visit mercury.com to learn more and apply online in minutes. Mercury is a fintech company, not an FDIC-insured bank. Banking services provided through Choice Financial Group and Column NA, members FDIC. I follow the news closely, but I'm not an election junkie. I know who's running. I keep an eye on the big and medium races, but I just, look, there are people who enjoy elections the way they enjoy sports, and I don't enjoy elections. Actually, the way I also don't enjoy sports. Not for me. And because of that, sometimes I will notice that the midterms are approaching in a backwards way. They'll sneak up on me. I will just become aware, as an otherwise pretty active news and internet consumer, that the vast national jacuzzi that is our discourse has been getting hotter and more bubbly. Leftists and liberals howling into each other's respective voids at a shriller timbre. The sudden arrival of random new politicians dunking or being dunked on. Haley Stevens, an unusual talker, here today, gone tomorrow. Abdul El-Sayed, sounds like Obama, but says different things. This is my level of tracking. It's blurry. But what I notice sharply is how all the political attention changes conversations I actually do care about. One of them being technology and how it affects us. And technology is very much in the jacuzzi this year. Really, data centers. The internet infrastructure powering the AI boom, which we've covered on our show, they are now a part of this year's midterms, with politicians on both sides understanding there's a lot of popular sentiment, some of it quite negative, directed at all this, and voters might be looking at these buildings as the brakes they can slam on the AI push. Reporter Jasmine Sun got curious about how voters and politicians in two swing states were thinking about data centers, what the backlash looks like, what's causing it, and where it all might be about to go. So she set out on a road trip through the American jacuzzi.
I spent about 10 days in Michigan and in Wisconsin, driving around between cities, small towns, data center sites, to just talk to a ton of people and figure out, do people actually hate these data centers? And if so, why?
Jasmine Sun is one of my favorite reporters covering the San Francisco tech scene, an anthropologist of a town where nearly everybody she knows is all in on AI. She spends a lot of her time writing about, talking to the people we normally hear from in the AI race, the people building that future. This summer, she wanted to talk to everybody else. The voters deciding what they think of all this, whether they actually want these supposed gifts they're being offered. Before you set out on this trip, how would you have explained data center opposition? Like, what was your view?
I had two concurrent views, I suppose. I was definitely confused. I didn't really get it. I thought that, you know, data centers have existed to power the internet for a very long time. Northern Virginia is full of them. And so I was like, maybe it's about AI, was what I thought. It might just be that people are scared of AI, that they hate AI, and their polarization of AI is just coming out as anger at data centers, which are sort of the physical proxy for hating AI in general, which is otherwise a quite difficult thing to shape or to fight. But I also definitely thought that a lot of people were just misinformed about what data centers were and their environmental impacts. And yeah, I wasn't really sure.
So you hit the road?
Yes.
What was the first sort of place in your road trip where you found one of your assumptions just being challenged, where you found yourself surprised?
So the first data center site or proposed data center site that we visited was Janesville, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. I had heard of Janesville when I was actually doing research on AI and potential labor impacts because I had been interested in deindustrialization and what happens when a bunch of jobs disappear.
Once the economic cornerstone of Janesville, the giant GM plant, in its heyday, employing 7,000 people.
Even I was dispatched.
And Janesville is most famous recently nationally because they had like a 100-year-old GM plant that closed in 2008 during the financial crisis, and this decimated the community.
When the plant idled in 2008, unemployment soared to 13%, and the town became a nonpartisan symbol of the Great Recession.
Thousands of jobs disappeared basically overnight in not that big of a town. It was the economic centerpiece of the town. People were not able to successfully retrain into new jobs. It was really bad for the community. And now, with the old GM site, which has been laying dormant for 15 or so years, there was a data center proposal where it's like, why don't we take this brownfield and build a hyperscale data center on top of it?
Time over.
Yeah.
That'd be great. Thank you.
So I am born and raised Rock County, so Janesville, Milton area my entire life. Been strictly pretty much Janesville area the last 15 years of my life.
So the first person I talked to, his name is Adam Schultz. He had spoken up on a city council meeting in favor of the data center, which is pretty rare because there's not a lot of people at these meetings who are pro-data center, or at least vocally so. And for Adam, it had been his job for 5 years to actually sell the brownfield that this GM site had been on.
Because from his perspective, it's like, there is a dead spot in town
Yes. That
is doing nothing.
Right. And it's like kind of in the middle of downtown. It's like literally a 5-minute drive from the main downtown corridor.
Got it.
It's super close. And it's literally a gigantic 100-acre concrete slab with a bunch of weeds overgrown on it. There is nothing going on there. And there has been nothing going on. And the reason that there's nothing going on is because there's a bunch of contamination and hazardous waste that GM never cleaned up that nobody else wants to buy land full of.
Nobody could ever make sense of the contamination and the numbers to develop anything there.
What were some of the other businesses that you tried to sell the site to? What kinds of businesses are these?
Typically, you know, it's a heavy industrial site that's kind of in the middle of town. Really good infrastructure for heavy manufacturing. I mean, that's what it always was. So those types of users were most of the conversations.
And this guy was so frustrated because every interested buyer said, I don't want to clean up the waste. They left. It's no longer his responsibility. But when a data center showed up and they were like, we will pay the $30 million to clean up the waste, he was like, finally, we will have something that isn't just a slab of concrete in this community.
So he wasn't even like personally in a position to make money off of it. He was just like, this is land that human beings have found too expensive to make suitable for humans. His perspective was, why wouldn't you want a factory for computers here?
Yes.
I've said it a number of times. I wasted 5 years of my life marketing the GM property. I'm confident that we will have a data center down there or we will have a giant slab of concrete. End of story. Like, you will not get a developer to spend money there outside of this industry. It's just not going to happen. And I'd love to be proven wrong. I don't believe I will be.
I mean, he just kept saying over and over, like, it's going to be a data center or it's going to be a concrete slab. The economics do not work for literally any other commercial buyer to buy this plot of land that's contaminated. I know because I tried. And he said, you know, like, I'm from Rock County. I've had GMers in my family. It's kind of a slap in the face to take what was once an economic centerpiece of the community and just let it lie there. Mm. And so for him, it was actually important to bring the business back in order to bring Janesville back, which has been, again, a sort of icon of one of these more economically depressed areas after deindustrialization.
The city of Janesville has yet to confirm what will go up at the site of the former GM plant, but Janesville residents at tonight's Common Council meeting are making it known what they don't want to go up at the site.
Our hair, our rights, stand up, Janesville.
On the other hand, though, when I met the activists who were organizing to get the data center blocked, what was surprising to me was, A, definitely not the sort of TikTok-addled idiots that some Silicon Valley types might caricature.
TikTok-addled idiots would be like, for instance, when you see people debating about data centers online, there is a lot of evidence that data centers, because they use a lot of electricity, can like raise local electricity prices. Mm-hmm. The concerns about water usage tend to be like pretty overblown or sort of misunderstood. So TikTok-addled activists would be like people who think that a nearby data center is going to drain the lakes or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not, there are definitely some people I'd met in general who had said these data centers are draining the Great Lakes. That's why they're building them here. These organizers were not one of them. In general, the activists tend to be pretty informed. They brought a copy of the local zoning code.
That's the GM site there, right?
Yep.
There's this guy right here. So we're right
here. So yeah, we're on the GM Jetco site right about there. So this is how the city of Janesville is zoned out. So anything with that yellow kind of coloration is actually residential zoning. So you can see very strongly.
They said, yes, this area is industrially zoned, but we don't like that it's next to a residential area. They knew a lot about the local environment. They were willing to admit uncertainty about questions like water pollution. They were not saying this is going to drain the Great Lakes. What they were making arguments for was, A, no one's done long-term environmental studies of hyperscale data centers, which is pretty true. But what I was actually more surprised by was these folks were really, really angry at their local government. They were really angry at the old Janesville city manager and the city council. I think there's a feeling from a lot of these places, which tend to be more rural, tend not to be like the richest areas, that we get screwed over by corporations all the time, and we always get the short end of the stick. And how are our part-time city council members getting like $5,000 a year supposed to get a fair contract with these corporate lawyers who can always find a way to back out of a deal, who can leave a brownfield full of contaminated waste that you never cleaned up for 15 years?
Yeah. So we're talking about small communities that don't have the legal budget to negotiate well, they're not on equal footing, and then they don't have any room for wiggle if something happens on the other end. I mean, you'll never hold a company to a contract. They could bury us in legal fees.
Like have some sort of exception
right,
clause.
Or whatever it is.
If this happens, we can give up on the whatever.
Right, so there's no way. There's no municipal funding for enforcement and legal fees and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so
it's definitely very asymmetric.
It's very asymmetric. It's predatory. It's extractionary. It just, the whole thing feels just not right.
So in some ways, their opposition is not just like sort of like knee-jerk Luddite stuff. It's like, hey, this isn't transparent, and it's really easy to imagine this going in a different direction.
Yes.
Like, if you think we could get an ear with city manager or even council members, no, they didn't want to talk about it. And because this is shrouded in secrecy, like, I still don't know the level of involvement of, like, city council members or
NDAs.
NDAs galore.
Wait, tell me about the NDAs.
So a lot of data center developers, when they come into a community, they'll have a municipality sign an NDA to not reveal the customer, not reveal the environmental costs or what they're going to build there or what electricity use it would demand. All people would see is maybe a vague project like Project Cannoli or Project Nova that shows up on a city planning meeting. No one knows what it is. No one knows it's going to be a data center. No one knows it's going to be for OpenAI or Anthropic or whoever.
Why do the companies want these NDAs?
I've heard different reasons. So partly it's so that they can try to have different localities compete for deals against each other if they haven't made a decision yet. Partly it's to not immediately raise the land value of all of the neighborhoods around the data center.
Oh, so it's a way to have negotiating leverage against?
I think a lot of it has to do with negotiating leverage. Yeah. But like, frankly, every single person I talked to, even including every pro data center person I talked to on this trip, was anti-NDA. They thought it made the distrust much worse. Mm. They thought the lack of transparency meant that rumors could spread on social media and the city councils would not be able to stop them because they weren't able to talk. So Microsoft has decided to stop doing NDAs, for example. They just didn't realize how much distrust it would sow.
Interesting. So were you finding the activist argument more sympathetic than you'd imagined before the trip began?
I think I was. I mean, I think like I had obviously not lived through something like the GM plant closing. I had not lived through in Mount Pleasant where Foxconn promised 13,000 jobs. The village of Mount Pleasant and the local county, I think, took out like over $100 million in loans for infrastructure investments. And then Foxconn pulled out, built maybe a smaller factory with 1,000 jobs, and just kind of like left the village and the county trying to figure out what to do with all that land now that they had invested over $100 million for, you know, a town of a couple tens of thousands of people.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, my search engine's editor, Shruti Pinnamaneni, she did a story about that Foxconn deal before it had completely, I'm trying to think of a more uptown way to say like shat the bed, but like there is an asymmetry where big corporations can go town to town looking for the best possible deal, and those towns are not necessarily equipped to make a deal for themselves where the risk is distributed in a way that is good for them.
Exactly. And like one of the most egregious examples I saw during the road trip was in Saline, Michigan.
Saline Township is a small town with just over 2,200 residents. They have a lot of fight in them, and many of them voiced their concerns over a new data center coming into their community.
Saline Township has, I think, 3,000 people in it. So it's really small, really rural, like we're driving down a dirt road. That is the location of a new Stargate site that is being built for OpenAI and for Oracle. So these are gigantic tech companies coming in. It's going to be a huge 1.4 gigawatt data center. And initially in that case, Saline Township actually voted 4-1 against having the data center.
In September, Saline Township board members voted to deny rezoning the 575 acres of farmland needed for the $7 billion data center project, which will house Oracle and ChatGPT owner OpenAI.
The city council was not excited about the trade-off. And what happened was they got sued. They got sued by the data center developers over exclusionary zoning, saying that according to state law, you cannot bar all industrial zoning. You have to have some land allocated for industrial use. You can't just leave it all agricultural. And a town of 3,000 people is not going to win a lawsuit against OpenAI, Oracle, and the data center developers. So they settled for $14 million. And people were angry about the settlement.
Nobody's here to protect me. Nobody's here to protect us. I am angry. And maybe you can't do anything about it, but I'm angry you didn't fight harder. How dare you? How dare you? That's it.
I think it feels to people who live in that community like there was a democratic decision by the local government to say, no, thank you, please go somewhere else. And the data centers and the AI companies said, screw you, we're doing this anyway, and we have our lawyers to make this happen.
You know, we've all lived here, most of us all lived here all our lives. You're just coming in here and taking away from us. You know what, I can't believe this. I really can't believe it. The thing with it is, it already started.
And the feeling is that AI is a project that mainly helps some people somewhere else, people who are working computer jobs in San Francisco and New York, maybe. Most people who I talk to, they might use ChatGPT to write emails or make memes, but it's not an essential part of their lives. And so I think that there's this sense that these outside coastal corporations who are building something for their own, whether ego, race, their own software companies, whatever it is, they feel that they can decide what your town should look like, and they will use their asymmetric power in order to accomplish their vision, and you are mere collateral damage in that process. And so I think this feeling of who gets to shape the future, this feeling of, oh, these corporations, like, they don't even care about what we think. They don't even care about democratic process. They're happy to sort of force democratic process to their will. And it's all for this thing that isn't really producing anything that helps me, I think was the big feeling there.
they feel like they had Google Search and it was working fine. There's this new version of Google Search, which for some reason is massively expensive and requires all these new factories. It's as if there's a big machine in San Francisco that they find a little bit useful, but not that useful. And the big machine requires a giant exhaust pipe in the middle of their town. Maybe not literally in terms of pollution, but in terms of you will take the negative externalities of this.
Yes.
And whether you like it or not, it's kind of going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, two different people, one activist and one public school teacher in Madison who I talked to offhand just said, why doesn't Mark Zuckerberg build the data center in his backyard?
Like, they aren't building these in San Francisco. They're coming to one of the poorest counties in our state with a property that's been vacant, knowing that, like, people are thirsty to have development here or to have something here. Like, it feels predatory.
I think there's this question of, if this technology is so important to those people in San Francisco, can't they just put it there? Why are they taking the externalities and imposing that on us? And that feeling, I think, doesn't feel good to people.
And it's funny, it's not as if, you know, in the reign of like American auto companies, people didn't want the factories in their towns. It's not like they were like, I don't understand why Henry Ford doesn't just live in an auto plant.
It's just kind of intangible. I mean, like, I think a lot of the public policy problem is you have pretty abstract and diffuse benefits. They don't see the outputs, but then the harms are so tangible. The fact that there's now an ugly building near you and people hear things about water and pollution and electricity rates. It's tangible, narrow harms and like diffuse abstract benefits that will maybe come to our community and maybe somewhere else. And again, these deals mean that sometimes the property taxes don't show up for like 10 or 20 years. And people think, what if the data center gets abandoned by them? What if the AI bubble pops? Like, it's not necessarily true that just the property taxes mean that you are going to get a tax break next year. Sometimes it means the property taxes are going to be used to pay off the infrastructure improvements to build the data center. And then maybe in 10 or 20 years, after they finish paying for their streets for the data center, they will pay for the schools.
So it's like obvious costs, theoretical benefits.
I think so, yeah. One thing that was really shocking to me was how often anti-data center folks told me, I don't believe that that's going to happen. So like I would say something like, if you could guarantee that your electricity prices would stay the same for the next 5 years while this data center is being built, would you be more open to it?
Because they all say, no, we're not going to let your rates rise. We're going to cover it, right? That's what they all say. Is it just like, we don't believe it based on their history?
No, it's completely false. Everyone that is involved in these fights understands how it works. So we know that's bullshit. And they know that we know that that's bullshit. Does it matter? Not really so far. So they're either dumbasses or liars. It's one of the two.
Or both.
Yeah, because that's
and
not
people
how
would say, I don't believe that they're not going to raise the rates. DTE, the utility provider in Michigan, has raised rates almost every year for the last 5 years. Why would they stop doing it?
I don't believe them because we know their grid can't support it without adding more generation. And I think what I think of now when I say that, oh, they're not going to overtax the grid or anything like that, to me, when I read in between those lines, it's because, oh, instead of a big noisy data center next to your community, we're also going to stick a private gas generation power plant on the same property or nearby, or a small modular nuclear reactor. And I can't think of anything worse than having a data center, except to have a data center and a nuclear reactor next to your kid's school.
Or if I said something like, this data center is expected to pay 10, 20 million in property taxes year after year, like that could go towards the streets, that could go towards the schools. Does that interest you? Folks would say, I don't think they're going to do it. I think that they're probably going to write themselves a carve out. What if the AI bubble pops before they even do that?
It's infuriating that if at some point the AI bubble bursts in such a way that they just collapse, which is extremely possible, you know, then there's nothing, there's no protections for what happens to this land, what happens to communities that have already been burned. They can't recoup money, they can't recoup, and that's our tax dollars, you know? So it's just like supporting what feels like right before the 2008 crash, except for much worse.
And so it's not even necessarily that getting the deals slightly tweaked, learning the exact facts on water use or energy would have changed their minds. The fundamental thing going on was this repeated, I don't believe them when they say they're going to pay their property taxes. And I can point to an example in the past where we got screwed over by a big company. So why should we believe them this time? And I think it's an incredibly hard problem to make a deal in an environment of trust that low. And in that sense, I do sympathize with local officials who are trying to raise revenues, trying to bring economic development to their communities, and who are running into a roadblock because there is an element of trust that's required to sign a contract. And you can't guarantee everything will go perfectly.
We're going to take a short break. We've visited Janesville and Saline, two Midwestern towns with high levels of data center antipathy. When we come back, our road trip continues to meet a union leader who wants these data centers and a politician, Abdullah El-Sayed, who's fighting against them. The following conversation is brought to you by LabCorp On Demand. I find that sometimes I really, really hyper-focus on work and my social life, and I pay a little bit less attention to my health than I probably should. I was talking recently to a friend, and we had a pretty surprising conversation about this, really about medical tests. So have you ever done a blood test?
I mean, so many, haven't you?
I've done so many. Have you ever done one where you learned anything about your health?
Yeah.
This is Jenna Weiss-Berman. She works in podcasting. She's actually the person who greenlit Search Engine. She's the reason you're listening to this show at all. But today we were talking because she was telling me a story from her life from a few years ago. There's this time when she hadn't been feeling well, and so she'd gone to the doctor.
And this doctor decided to test me for something called my ceruloplasmin. It's a copper-binding protein. And it was found that I have this thing called Wilson's disease, which is a very rare and very deadly and dangerous liver disease. I mean, I really thought I was going to die, and I had just had a baby, so it would have been a real bummer to die right after that.
And the worst case scenario would have been, had you not been diagnosed, you would have died?
Yeah, I would have died for sure. It's like a real killer.
One strange symptom of Wilson's disease: tiny copper rings around your cornea, usually only visible in an eye exam. It's a rare disease, not always detected, which meant Jenna was very fortunate to have caught it and to know what to do to treat it, which is mainly just avoid all the foods that surprisingly have small amounts of copper in them. Avocados, who knew? But to her, the takeaway lesson:
everybody get blood tests. They're great.
LabCorp saved your life. You were the person who signed Search Engine. And so, because of LabCorp, Search Engine exists.
Oh my God, that's true. That's amazing.
It's important as a person to be proactive about your health, find out what's going on in your body, and not just wait for things to go wrong. And if you want more insight into what's happening, there's an easy way to find it. If you have questions about your health, LabCorp On Demand is a convenient and accurate way to get closer to answers. And you can do it from home. Here's how it works. Visit the website and choose from a suite of more than 100 lab tests, ranging from micronutrient and cortisol to testosterone and sexual wellness. From there, visit the LabCorp location closest to you to provide your sample. Within days, you'll receive reliable, easy-to-understand results from a lab doctor's trust. It's a first step towards truly knowing yourself and what's going on in your body from the inside out. To start, just visit labcorp.com/search engine and use code SEARCH to save up to 15% on select tests. That's labcorp.com/search engine and use code SEARCH. Know yourself. This episode of Search Engine is brought to you in part by Quince. There's nothing better than having those faithful wardrobe pieces you reach for automatically because you know they look and feel incredible, like the Quince Chino Stretch Pant in Olive. Quince crafts premium, versatile closet staples using luxury materials like 100% Mongolian cashmere, organic cotton, and high-performance merino wool. Their pieces are designed to hold up to constant wear, with iconic cashmere sweaters starting at just $60. Quince bypasses traditional retail markups and works directly with ethical factories, allowing them to price everything 50 to 80% lower than comparable luxury brands. They even applied this high-quality, direct-to-consumer philosophy to hotel-grade bedding, bath essentials, and furniture. Their sheets are great. Find your next fall favorites at Quince. Download the Quince app for app-exclusive offers or go to quince.com/search engine. Get free shipping on your order and 365-day returns, now available in Canada and the UK too. That is quince.com/search engine. Welcome back to the show. A lot of what Jasmine had captured in her microphone on her mini American tour was semi-organized rage towards these data centers. I'd wanted to hear more about people like the real estate agent we'd heard from, though. People who actually wanted these buildings. Who were you, like, in your road trip, who were you running into who wanted this? Besides people, obviously, who work for AI companies, like, who was pro-data center?
I would say that the few categories are, there are definitely some local officials who are really excited about data centers, again, for tax revenue reasons. I mean, in Mount Pleasant, Microsoft is paying $20 million a year in taxes to this city of, I think, like 28,000 people. And so it is a huge boon for the tax base, and it means that these towns don't have to raise taxes on their actual residents, and they can invest in infrastructure as costs go up. And that was something I heard a lot of from local officials. In addition, you have labor.
I mean, maybe the first question, very basic, is just how you got involved in this union and Local 139 and just the basic mini history of
it. Well, that goes back. I started when I was 14 years old at a local excavating shop. I would shovel the garage floor at night, change tires on the trucks.
I talked to a union leader named Terry McGowan, who gave me his whole backstory. He's with the International Union of Operating Engineers, and he told me that with all the data center projects springing up around Wisconsin, the skilled trades have been kind of booming. People are getting these super well-paying jobs. The apprenticeship program that the union runs is doubling in size and enrollment. Companies are literally dangling these cash per diems at workers because there are so many shortages and there's such high demand. And so he said from his perspective, the data center boom was such a windfall for the skilled trades.
It's just been a windfall. I mean, when I started in this business, it was a roller coaster. Okay, work was good, work was bad. Work was good, work was bad. This has just been a steady stream. I grew up just outside of Milwaukee. Milwaukee was an industrial city. And back in Milwaukee's heyday, when I was a young man, noise was money. And you know what the thing was? The citizens of that area revered these huge, massive industrial factories because this is the engine that is paying our bills, sending our kids to school, feeding us, you know, housing us. And they were hailed.
And so construction workers, the trades workers, are pretty excited about data centers. But other than local officials who really grok the tax revenue and maybe the few thousand people who are in the trades, there's not really a super strong pro-data center constituency in the way that, at least with housing or with solar farms, there's usually some group of people like environmentalists or people who want to move there who are kind of excited about it. One really interesting thing that shows up in the polling is data center opposition is pretty equal no matter whether you actually live near a data center or not. So if it was just NIMBYism, you would think people who live near the housing might not want the new housing, but people who don't live near there would be excited about housing, right? That's sort of normal standard issue NIMBYism. What you see in data center polling is that whether or not you live near a proposed data center, everyone kind of hates them equally, which suggests that it is more anger at data centers or a dislike of data centers than it is specifically, I want data centers just not near me.
It's funny, the very same people that are afraid of AI, and I think that's what it is more than anything. They're just afraid of the advanced technology. They're so afraid of AI taking over everything or their media or their brain that the negative people, the people against AI, have actually gotten in their brains. That's what I feel.
But so it's like what you're seeing, it sounds like, is the support basically comes from local politicians who say, this is going to be great for the tax base and skilled tradespeople, like those unions like them. Otherwise, it sounds like the picture of the opposition that was starting to be drawn for you is if one of the big questions around AI is like, if this is really going to be socially important technology, how are those spoils going to be shared? The deals around these data centers, it's like one of the early battles. It's like, are the companies going to negotiate deals for themselves where they keep most of the spoils, or is some local city councilor going to be able to learn from a local city councilor somewhere else to carve out a deal that makes sense? And like, the intuition that activists have, that people have, is that these are bad deals.
The intuition is that there is such a power asymmetry that they don't really get to choose.
Please welcome the next United States Senator from the state of Michigan, Abdul El Tid.
So one of the most interesting things was going to Lansing, Michigan, a rally that Abdul El Sayed hosted with Bernie, with AOC.
There are things happening in this country that people everywhere are shocked by. A government of, by, and for the oligarchs.
This was kind of bundled into the Bernie AOC anti-oligarchy tour. A lot of it was also about dark money and politics. That was sort of the narrative that was hit again and again. Dark money could mean AIPAC. Dark money could mean big pharma. Dark money could mean the utility company everyone hates. But dark money also meant these data center deals.
We've got each other. Folks who may never understand the lives that one another lead, locking arms together to say that we will not have our future dominated by the likes of your big tech company to put a data center in our backyard.
And it was very interesting to see in speech after speech, even though no rally speech was completely about AI, AI fit perfectly into this story of the oligarchy, the idea that corporations are colluding with the government, are paying off your elected officials in order to make decisions that are good for the billionaires and bad for you. And so to go from that experience of like being at this rally where Abdul is saying, when big tech buys a Senate seat, they're buying a data center in your backyard. When DTE buys a Senate seat, they're buying your local officials staying quiet while they raise the rates on you.
When they tell us that they're going to raise our electricity rates, we won't back down. When they tell us they want to put that data center in our backyard, we won't back down. When they tell us that they want to take our tax dollars and give them there, when we've got kids who need them here, we won't back down.
Going from that experience about hearing AI slotted into the money and politics story to Celine, where the developers have literally sued the democratically elected city council in order to build a data center that nobody wanted there. It really became clear how the oligarchy story played together with the data center story.
Hey, so nice to meet you, Jasmine.
And so what was Abdul El Sayed like?
I mean, so I sat down with Abdul for 30 minutes the day after the rally in Ann Arbor because the team decided it would be a better venue to go deeper on AI policy. And he has a long, long list of demands in terms of regulating AI that go from we should force a divestment of Anthropic from Amazon or Microsoft and OpenAI to make sure that you don't end up with AI monopolies, to we should have an international treaty with China so that we can pause and slow down AI, to we should have an FDA merged with the SEC, merged with some other regulatory agency solely dedicated to regulating AI. Because
these corporations have too much incentive to do things that are terrible for humanity, but very good for making money in the short run. If we take seriously the risk to the social contract, then public ownership has to be part of it, right? Similar with utilities. Like
he had a big laundry list of demands for AI regulation.
And what did you think?
It was a very big list. I'm not sure that I agree that these policy proposals all made a ton of sense. I mean, I think that what I felt was that populist politicians like Abdul in Michigan or Francesca Hong, the Democratic frontrunner for governor in Wisconsin, who's advocating a moratorium on data centers too, they are tapping into real anger. And I left with a lot more sympathy for the anger and the suspicion that people felt. I didn't leave thinking that all of these very ambitious regulatory ideas were necessarily the right ones. But it became clear that we are going to need some AI plan, maybe at the national level, maybe at the state level, that tackles a bunch of these issues, labor stuff, the data centers, kids' safety, and makes people feel that someone has this under control. Because the other thing that people kept telling me, like activists, for example, was like, our local government, our mayor, they're not doing their homework. They're in over their heads. They don't have this under control. And so I think having state or national governments tell people, this is how we're thinking about AI. This is how we're thinking about the AI industry. We understand your concerns about labor issues, about the environment, about whether this could be a bubble. And this is what we're going to do to ensure that you're not left holding the bag as normal Americans if the AI companies do this or that. That's the kind of leadership that the public wants right now and that they're not getting, which is leaving a vacuum for a lot of more blunt populist mechanisms.
It's tough, though. I mean, like, the idea that no one's in control, I'm very sympathetic to. Who should be in control, I find very confusing.
Yes. I mean, I don't think the answer to me is that the government is in control of, like, what we use AI for. I think that the thing that people want is protection against downside risk.
Yeah.
And I do think it is the government's job to protect people against downside risk, whether that is a data center becoming a stranded asset if the company decides to up and leave, or whether that downside risk is people losing their jobs or whatever else people are worried about.
I mean, could you imagine a world where you basically have a bunch of states that do data center moratoriums? You end up with some localities negotiating better deals because anti-AI backlash means that there's only a few places you can do data centers. And so you get to a good outcome because of all of this politicking?
I mean, in a way, absolutely, right? Like, I think it is a great thing that Microsoft has said publicly they're not doing NDAs anymore on these. I think that I would expect other AI companies and developers to follow suit. That seems good, to have more transparency. I've heard both from people who are in these communities as well as from folks from the AI and tech side that the deals are getting better for communities. They are extending more in community benefits. The question that I'm getting from people I know in AI world is, what do we have to give these communities? What do we want? What can we promise them? We really want to build this data center. Or just tell us how we can use money to solve the problem. And so I think that there's not a world anymore where some small town has to give a subsidy to Meta. Like, no one should have to be subsidizing Meta's build out, you know? And so I think that the deals are getting better because of the level of backlash. I think the main thing that I'm thinking is, I suspect there is a way to do the deals right. There is a way for places like Janesville, which does in fact have this giant concrete slab in the middle of the city and could use some commercial revenue, to find a way to get a good deal out of the AI companies. Whether or not they are set up to do so at the moment is unclear. I mean, the best case that I heard for example, Kathy Hochul's data center moratorium, is that it can bring the standards for these deals up to the state level because the state is significantly more equipped to figure out what should go on. So that's actually the justification her team has been giving, both in public, and I've talked to them also about this briefly as well, where they're saying, in the same way that, like, Gretchen Whitmer set standards on solar farms in Michigan, which were very controversial, you shouldn't leave these tiny towns to figure out how to negotiate with Meta. You should pause, set a bunch of standards at the state level, have Kathy Hochul's team negotiate with the data center developers and the AI labs to figure out what's possible and what's not, release statewide standards saying, you want to build a data center in New York State, you're going to do closed loop cooling, you're going to use X percentage renewable energy, you are going to not sign an NDA. And then once those standards are set at the state level, it hopefully becomes much easier to make the local deals.
It solves the part-time city councilor, like, asking, like, ChatGPT, what's a good data center deal problem?
I think so. And I actually think that, like, if that's actually what's going on, that might be a smart way to do it.
Huh. So are you more positive towards stuff like the New York State data center moratorium than you were before you went on the road?
I think I am. I mean, again, to be clear, like, I am more positive on it if it means the thing that I just said and not just, like, it's a permanent moratorium, we're never going to deal with this ever again. Because sometimes people say moratorium, what they mean is ban,
yeah,
right? And, like, that I am not sure if I believe in. But, like, if the actual thing that's happening is that your state government is figuring out what are the standards that we can set, what are the terms of engagement for New York towns for data centers, I think that's pretty interesting.
Huh. So you actually came across, like, I feel like the upside of your trip is, like, it doesn't just feel like a polarized nation screaming at each other based off things they saw on TikTok. It feels like a country trying to figure out a deal that makes sense.
And how to make those deals in an environment that's already so low trust.
Yeah. So that is what I learned from Jasmine's road trip. That, as often is the case, this country looks a bit more reasonable when you talk to people offline. That what voters are saying they want is not exactly brakes they can smash to stop this technology, They want a better, fairer process around these data center deals. They've learned the hard way that industry can burn them, and they want their politicians to make deals they could trust. As for Jasmine, you can find her ongoing, very excellent coverage of AI, San Francisco, and the technological and political currents shooting through our culture at her Substack, Jasmine Sun. We'll have a link in our show notes. I do not miss a post, and neither should you. This episode of Search Engine is brought to you in part by Notability. A new academic term brings heavy course loads, piles of lecture notes, and plenty of late-night study sessions. For students seeking an edge and parents evaluating the cost of digital study aids, finding software that actually works is essential. Notability, the note-taking app, now turns your notes into quizzes and study guides automatically. It's called Learn. And this back-to-school season, Notability is guaranteeing it. Use Learn this semester, and if it doesn't help you study, they'll cover the cost of the rest of your semester. It's a guarantee, not a claim. Most study apps ask you to trust the marketing. This one puts the company's money behind it. Instead of manually typing out flashcards or constantly switching platforms, Learn transforms whatever you type or write into active practice quizzes and study resources right away. It's designed to help you extract maximum value from every single lecture, giving you a totally low-risk way to improve how you study this semester. Try Learn Guarantee and Notability today by going to notability.com/learn-guarantee and use code SEARCH25 at checkout to get 25% off. This episode of Search Engine is brought to you in part by Snapple. Hey, before we jump back into the show, let's take a quick break. But not just any break. This is a refreshing break with Snapple. We all know about Snapple's iconic real facts, so let's take a moment to go over some of my faves. Snapple Real Fact 1361. A nun held one of the first PhDs in computer science. Snapple Real Fact 1643, the first search engine's name is Archie. Snapple Real Fact 1517, in New York, it is illegal to sell a haunted house without telling the buyer. Snapple Real Fact 1228, chimps can develop their own fashion trends. So grab a Snapple, take a second, and enjoy the moment. Because let's be honest, this might be the most refreshing part of your day. Snapple, make your break more interesting. All right, now let's get back to the show. This episode of Search Engine is brought to you in part by Square. Most of us recognize Square as the quick tap-to-pay terminal at our favorite neighborhood spots. For instance, when I go to the best butcher in the world, Staubitz, they use Square and it makes checkout completely seamless. My receipt pops right up on my phone and I earn loyalty rewards without typing in a thing. But for the owners behind those counters, Square is so much more than a credit card reader. It's an all-in-one system that brings together payments, scheduling, inventory, and sales analytics. Square keeps everything synced in real time across all your devices. Plus, built-in marketing tools help keep regulars coming back, with loyalty members spending 53% more per visit on average. Whether you're starting something new or looking for a better way to run the business you already have, Square gives you the tools to take payments, manage your day-to-day, and keep growing. And right now, you can get up to $200 off Square hardware at square.com/go/engine. That's square.com/go/engine. Run your business your way with Square. Get started today. Search Engine is a presentation of Odyssey. It was created by me, PJ Vogt, and Shruti Pinnamaneni. Garrett Graham is our senior producer. Emily Maltaire is our associate producer. Our production intern is Piper Dumont, who also fact-checked this week's episode. Theme, original composition, and mixing by Armin Bazarian. Our executive producer is Leah Reese-Dennis. Thanks to the rest of the team at Odyssey, Rob Morandi, Craig Cox, Eric Donnelly, Colin Gaynor-Moore, Curran, Josephina Francis, Kurt Courtney, Vanessa Tincati, and Hilary Sheff. If you have a business and would like to advertise on our show, please send us an email, pjvote85@gmail.com, subject line advertising. You can also send your questions there if you have a question you'd like the show to answer. If you're a listener and would like to not hear ads on the show, you can sign up for Incognito Mode. It's our paid feed. You also get bonus episodes. You can find that at searchengine.show. Your contributions there are what help us keep this project running. Thank you, as always, for listening. We'll see you in a couple weeks. This episode of Search Engine is brought to you in part by Vuori. You know that feeling when you put on a new piece of clothing and just keep wearing it? That has happened to me with Vuori. The first time I put on their hoodies, I am a hoodie connoisseur, I was struck by how soft the fabric is, how perfectly it fits, and how it actually moves with you, like it was made for real life, not just the gym. I got compliments on this hoodie. I don't get compliments on my hoodies. Compared to other workout or loungewear I've tried, Vuori really nails that rare combination of comfort and style. Vuori is an investment in your happiness. For our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. Get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at vuori.com/PJ. That's vuori.com/PJ. Exclusions apply. Visit the website for full terms and conditions. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on US orders over $75 and free returns. Go to vuori.com/PJ and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing. Exclusions apply. Visit the website for full terms and conditions.